The language worker is the result of my deep gratitude to the world for continuing to allow me to work on language projects, teaching, mentoring, and reflecting on the phenomenon of language and what it means for humanity. The most visible part of the project, the podcast, is another window into the world of language services and its key players. Translators, project managers, talent managers, sales and business growth specialists, technology experts, content creators, founders of small and medium-sized language service companies, language teachers, and all the professionals who are willing to share their experience, knowledge, and strategies for navigating the waters of this ever-changing industry. For me, it's also an opportunity to learn and share knowledge acquired over more than 20 years of doing what I love the most, working with language.
Hi, everybody. Another exciting, in this case, afternoon. So it's a Monday, and I have invited these ladies to join me for this episode. It's a very special and unique one, too. I always say this about everything, right? But the truth is that I actually have met Agata in person recently because we are now friends, colleagues, co-volunteers for Women in Localization, the Portuguese chapter. So the truth is that we met on the 10th of October for our first ever event in person, right? And I talked to her and I said, well, you guys, you need to come and present your company to everybody. And I love doing that, talking to people who have companies, who are involved in companies, who whatever they do in the company. I'm always interested in people in the industry from whatever perspective. And so Agata decided to actually invite Madhu. And for Madhu and I, it really is the first time that we're talking or meeting. And I already know a little bit about her. It just happened in the pre-podcast conversation when we were just saying hi. But it's true that we have a lot of things in common, I think, as being immigrants, all of us, for at least a period of our lives. So we just started talking about that. And you know how conversation flows. So I ended up knowing things that I was not planning to know before starting to record. But this is great to have you here. Thank you so much, Agata and Madhu, in this case, representing Suma Linguae. Am I saying this correctly? We will see. Yes. So it's like the Latin version, right? Latin, Latin from classic Latin, not Latino. And so it's just, let's get to know just your name, the way you pronounce your name, where you come from, just the basics before we start talking about, you know, your background and everything else about you. So Agata, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you, Rita, for your invitation. Yes, that's true. I had the pleasure to meet you in person. And thank you also. Thank you very much for inviting us to the podcast. Now we have another chance to meet in a slightly bigger group online this time, but it's equally pleasant. So thank you very much for having us. So to answer your question, how do we pronounce my name? It's a Polish name. So yes. The first name is very simple, as you hear. Agata. I know that in Portuguese we add a little accent and it's Agata, it's more singing, but in Polish it's just Agata.
I had never thought about that.
We can train later on. And the surname is Szubstarska. So my name is Agata Szubstarska. As I said, originally coming from Poland, living in Portugal for the last 10 years already. Time is flying here. Yes, when you live well and you're happy, then time is flying. Localization, it is the industry I've been from the very, very beginning since I left the university. So the relationship with languages, translation, business, it's all very much interconnected. And for the past 3 years, I've been happily collaborating with Suma Linguae. Currently, I'm the managing director for Europe, working on everyday basis, having this pleasure to collaborate also on a daily basis with Madhu. So I'm very happy that we are here together representing the company, and we will be able to tell you a little bit more about our lives and work.
Yes, please. So Madhu, let's listen to this beautiful name. Is it Madhu short for something, or is it
No, it's not.
Okay, let's go.
First of all, thank you for inviting us, Rita and Agata. Thank you for bringing me along. Actually, it's a very short name, Madhu. It can actually be a name of a boy or a girl in India. A lot of people do mistake it. It means honey, very simple. And Sundaramurthy is actually my father's name. So where I come from in India, we actually keep our father's name as our surname, like the name. It's not a family name, but his name. And that's how the girls keep their father's name and they take it ahead, right? So I decided to keep my father's name even after I got married. I stay in India. I work for Soma Lingve Technologies. And after being in multiple roles, now I'm the global HR director. I've had the pleasure of living in Europe for a couple of years. And I fell into the language industry, I would say, by chance. Moved back to India, went to an interview, then what was known as Mayflower Language Services. And now, of course, we merged with Soma Lingve. So we are Soma Lingve Technologies. And that's when it started way back in 2006. Have had various roles as a translator, as a project manager, always been fascinated by people and cultures. And when I got the opportunity to take the role as the HR director, I jumped and I said, why not? We've been growing through mergers and acquisitions. What better way to get to know people, cultures, you know, than this way? So I've been here for quite a long time. Love working with Agatha and the team at Soma Lingve. Every day is a great learning. And very, very excited to be on your podcast today.
Well, no more excited than I am to have you guys. So it's very nice. You're, you know, highly, you are people who love communicating, getting to know people. And this is one of the best things about our industry is that we are people, right? So we really enjoy this connection and talking and sharing our experiences. And this is what we live for, basically. So let's go back in time. When you were, I suppose, back in Poland. Agata. I'm having trouble.
Anyway, well done. Absolutely.
So were you always interested in languages? Were you one of those little girls who were always was always looking forward, like me, right, to American songs, American series or others, but especially those in my case, as you can see, my Madonna is here because I have to say this, I'm celebrating this week my 37th anniversary as a Madonna fan. So this is a very important I know other people might not celebrate these things, but for me, it's very important because it's, you know, it's where my interest in communication and languages started taking shape. It's when I became a Madonna fan. So that's why I keep on mentioning it all the time. But was this your case? Did you have a reference? Were you obsessed with things that you had on TV? Do you guys have subtitles in Poland or is it voiceover? What kind of situation did you have growing up, your relationship with languages? Is it in the family?
Well, first of all, congratulations on your anniversary. Celebrations are here to be celebrated, so keep up with the tradition. Well, it's a very good question, and I think I'm not going to surprise you with, you know, very multicultural background because I grew up in a very monolingual Poland, in a very monocultural family. And then I'm not sure if you ever happened to watch Polish TV, but it's very difficult for foreigners. It's very shocking because we just have a lector. So there is the original voice and then there is a lector applied on that. Usually it's male's voice and the male voice is speaking for all the personalities in the movie.
Oh,
so you
wow.
have two voices simultaneously. We somehow get used to that. I know that when my husband goes to Poland, it's shocking and he absolutely doesn't understand how even people exist in that country and can watch TV. But this is how it is. So Polish, it's spread all around. There is at that time when I was growing up in a small city, I wasn't exposed too much to languages. But then something happened in my life and it has to see with our holidays, family holidays in Italy, where I was just stuck by lightning when I first heard the Italian and I thought, wow, this is a language when you speak with all the emotions, not so many diphthongs, you can just, you know, pronounce it so nicely. It's such a beautiful language. And then it was that moment when I woke up the day after and I told my mom, look, I think I'm going to leave Poland. And she probably thought that it's a 11-year-old speaking, like she'll change her mind. But as I was growing up, this idea of getting into languages was growing inside me. And soon I started learning English more seriously. And I took up all the exams for FCE and all the certificates. And actually, when I finished high school, I decided, well, it's now or never. So that's when I left to Italy, and this is when the whole European...
So you went to Italy first.
Yes. It was an absolute love at first hearing and first sight as well. And I went to Italy, and I had, you know, Italian was very fast to acquire, because when you feel the passion inside you and you're driven, it's, you know, it's a music to your ears. And that was very fast. That's how it started. Then my international journey took me through a couple of more countries. I lived in Spain, in Valencia for 2 years, and then moved to the UK. Had two short stops back in Poland just to reassure myself that it's not the final destination. And then here I am in Portugal, living for wow. the last 10 years.
I had no idea. I was not expecting that, I have to say.
Yes. And, you know, the languages, I wish I had more time to actually pursue learning languages more in free time, because it's my absolute passion. And when I'm thinking about getting old, I always tell myself that I'll go back to the university at some point to study languages again. There's a fantastic association that I'm a member of, which is HYPIA. It's a polyglot association. Which gathers polyglots from around the world. So if anyone listening to your podcast is a polyglot or a hyperglot, then I highly recommend them to read more about Hypia.
So just before we keep going, so what's the difference between a polyglot and a hyperglot?
So there are different rules and statistics. Some say that a polyglot, the difference between polyglot and hyperglot is the number of languages that you know. So according to the association, you become a hyperglot when you start speaking 6 languages.
Mm. Okay, now we know.
Yes.
I guess we need to talk to these people, right? Should we?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a fantastic source for your guests.
Exactly.
Well.
Can you imagine?
Definitely.
I live for this, right? So, Madhu, what's the story? Growing up in India, where you have, I mean, it's a whole other story, because we're not talking about countries like Portugal or Poland, where you have one language.
Right.
People have, you know, it's a widespread educational system. I suppose Poland should be the same from that point of view. Yeah, we have our other official languages, but in our case, there's one that it's a very small portion of the population. The other one is obviously sign language, which is an official language in Portugal. But what's the story when you're born in India, where you have just,
it's crazy,
I'd say,
right?
Hundreds of languages, right, to begin
yes,
with?
Yes, yes. So I guess you're born with at least 4 languages being spoken around you, right? And
okay.
And that's why languages are very
so
important.
So you're like a polyglot.
Actually, you're already,
because it's
you're
far.
Already there, right? You just need 2 more and then you become a hyperglot.
Yes, sure.
But what happens, so most good, like good education system is English because of the British colonial culture, right? So most of us do go to English school. So English is a language we learn. There's always the language you speak at home. And in my case, it was multiple languages because my mom spoke
what do you speak
another
at
language.
Home?
Yes, we speak a different language at home. If your parents are not from the same state, then it's also probable that you're speaking 2 languages at home, right? Your mom speaks one language with you. Your dad speaks one language with you. So there are officially 22 languages in India. And whichever state you study in, right, you have to learn that language as the third language. So there's 3, right? 1, English. 2 is the most widespread Indian language, which is Hindi. And 3 is the state language, and then you could have your mother tongue, your father tongue, and whatever. In my case, since my father was in the defense, we moved states because the job has to get you to move from state to state, and you had to pick up a language, new friends, new cultures every few years, right? I never thought, like Agatha, that, okay, this is the industry I'm going to go to, but languages came easy to me. I think it's also a gene pool. My mom is very good with languages. She will be listening to somebody for 5 minutes. She would have never heard the language for her life. And then she would start talking in that language. She's really, really good, even today. So languages were easy. They came by easy. I just found it easy to listen, to talk to people, and then try to put some words together and start a conversation. You can already see I talk quite a bit. So learned a lot of languages growing up in school. And then I actually trained to be... hold on, an economist. So I'm a master's in economics, and I wanted to actually go into labor economics. That was my master's. My thesis was in labor economics, and you will be surprised to know it was to understand why female actors, actresses get paid less than male, right? That was my topic. I thought I would go into the film world. Maybe, Rita, I would have met you in Hollywood if I would have taken
Or
that
Bollywood.
Part. or Bollywood if I would have taken that path. But no, economics happened. I got my first job was at a recruitment firm. And then I got married and I moved to Germany. Started learning German, realized I loved the language, right? I also think, everybody tells me, I think a lot like German, very structured, A, B, C, this needs to get done at this time. I have a calendar with all sorts of colors telling me what I need to do with my life. So love the language, love the people. So I would go to school in the morning, learn German, of course, from one of my favorite teachers who I'm in touch with even today. And then chance have it, one of my friends who is Greek was teaching English in a private Greek school. And she said, you know what, we are short of a teacher. You speak very good English. You've learned English as a British national because that's the English that you learn in India. Can you come and teach the kids? Because they need to write exams. They want to go study in the UK. They want to go to the US. So I said, okay. So learning German during the day, coming back home, getting some housework done, going back into the city to teach English to Greek kids. I think that was my initiation into languages and culture. Moved back to India in 2006, got a job at Mayflower Language Services, haven't looked back. And I really enjoy the story and the narrative behind languages and what it does to people. I think that's important for me.
Just like me, right? So that's why we're here. The idea is to tell this narrative that is slightly different for everyone, but with the same basis. So that's what keeps us all together, right? So Agata, you left Poland, and I didn't get it if you went before or after university.
So when I moved to Italy, I stayed there for 1 year, and my goal was to learn the language, start working, save up money for the university, and then start studying there. And as motivated as I was at that time, I did manage to do so. That was the plan. And then I enrolled at the university in Florence. So I studied there during my BA. But then for different personal reasons, towards the end, I had to move to Poland for some time. And this is when I just finished the BA in Poland. So I encountered some fantastic professors at the Tischner European University in Krakow, who were kind enough to accept most of the subjects that I have studied in Italy. So then I managed to complete my BA in Poland. But then at the very last year,
was it a BA in translation, in languages?
Linguistics.
None of that? In linguistics.
Yes.
You know, we have this in common.
Yes, absolutely. And university in Florence was absolutely fantastic. And it was also a very multilingual experience, studying in Italian, studying English with Italian professors, and then getting Spanish classes at the same time. I'm not sure how I handled that, but that was many years ago. So maybe the brain was also more flexible to handle.
You win some, right, in your brain.
Yes, absolutely. Sure. I think that's part of the whole process, right? Also, the more languages you know, the better your process of studying becomes. And you know the drill already, you know what works with you, what doesn't. Yes, and then I completed BA in Poland. And just at the very last semester, there was an opening for an internship in Spain. And then I said, well, this is my second opportunity. It's time to move again.
So in a translation company?
So it was a part of the Erasmus program, but not for studying. It was an opening for an internship. And at that time, that was, I believe, a tourist agency. They were accepting linguist students, so I went there. And then that was the second love of, Spanish culture, Spanish language. I moved to Valencia and I stayed again.
Mm-hmm. So this is what I always say, in languages, at least, maybe in other industries doesn't work exactly this way, but I feel like every single job that you do prepares you for the next job that you do, and then for the following job that you do. So it's like that. If we have this as a basis of our knowledge, right? Every time we do something, this will be very, very present. And we will always, always, always use all the knowledge that we acquired in all previous jobs to get to the next job, right? This
Absolutely.
Is my conviction. So then you worked in a traveling agency. And then when was your first LSP on site, right? When did you start working in the industry itself?
Well, it was back then in Spain. So as I
because
was
there's lots of them, right?
Yes, absolutely. Out of personal interest, I started researching local translation agencies, and I did find one in Valencia. This agency is still existing, Interput Translations, with a fantastic owner, Nuria, who was kind enough to take me under her wings, and she taught me everything translation. So this company is specialized in audio visual translation.
Oh, wow.
So yes, that was the very first contact with LSP. They also had a part of the company was focusing in teaching languages. So I had an opportunity to teach English to kids for some time. And that was my first LSP that I've been in.
Wow, that is insane. So it's one of those LSPs that do multiple things. There's a bunch of them that do that, languages and language work, let's call it that. So Madhu, you jumped at this opportunity of working in this LSP. Was it big LSP, smallest LSP compared to what it is now, Sumailingue? So was it much smaller? Was it like a family-owned business? What kind of business was it back then?
It was smaller, but it was one of the most well-known LSPs. It is still one of the most well-known LSPs in India. It was called Mayflower Language Services. And I started under the, of course, guidance and training of Madhuri, who is right now our CEO at Sumailingue. We were about, I would say, 12 people at that time, primarily linguists, a couple of project managers. And of course, we slowly started growing the company. And then today, we are a strong bunch of 300 people in the organization spread across the globe. 2016 was when we started collaborating with Suma, the Polish LSP, under Krzysztof. And then Sumailingue and Mayflower decided to merge, right? We found synergies. We found areas where, you know, we liked each other's cultures. We worked well together, and we became Sumailingue Technologies. So that's when, you know, the mergers and acquisition journey started. And then, of course, we started acquiring more companies from Poland, from Belgium, from US, from Canada, Sweden. And then, of course, there was no need to look back, right? You learn so much through the acquisition of another company. You're actually doing the same thing, but there's a lot of different ways through which you do it, right? So they say the end is the same, but the means to get there can be so different. So you can improve with every acquisition. You can align with every acquisition. So I think that journey for me has been amazing. Even if I had changed 10 jobs, probably I wouldn't have learned so much as
so
I
let's start with the first one.
Yes.
What was the first thing that you did in the LSP?
So I actually was hired to plan, and Agatha, you will be surprised, the German language training program for one of the customers. They had about 30 people in the organization who were supposed to go to Germany for a 6-month project, and they had to be trained on how to, you know, behave, what kind of emails to send. So very basic etiquette training is what the client wanted. And since I had just come back from Germany and I was also working for a limited time at a bank there, they said, you know what, you've been there, you've interacted with people. We need somebody who has hands-on current experience with people. And I used to stay in Munich and the team was going to Munich. So that's how I started. That's the first project I did.
So you were what I call, and I do that too, so a cultural consultant, right?
Yes.
So that's the job, well, a
that's
possible job. Usually I do it in a more linguistic approach only, but you apparently had the chance to actually use, there you go, all your knowledge.
All
like
the
I say,
knowledge, right?
This is
how to behave in office, how to behave when you go out with your team members, how to pay for your bills, right? What happens there? It's very different from how we do
very
it in
different.
India, right? So it was a lot of fun, did that, and then started preparing a language, I would say, curriculum for different European languages along with the team. And we did a lot of language training at that time. Mm-hmm. At that time, if you remember, Rita, localization testing was big, right? You would go and test applications, you would go and test games. And then I moved into something called as game localization testing. So we would go to one of our client location and actually play games that were not released in the market.
I know exactly how it goes because that's how I did it in the States, right? I used to
so
go on site and work from there.
Correct. So it was a lot of fun sitting with different linguists, some of them who were Indians who had learned languages, some of them who had moved to India from Europe and other countries, and they had made India their home. And we used to be a big bunch working at the client location and, you know, saying, oh, this is wrong in German, but this sounds fun in Japanese. So, you know, doing things on the job, hands-on. So that was something I did. And then, of course, project management from a localization perspective, you know, website localization, a lot of multimedia localization, because Mayflower had that as one of its core services. We did a lot of voiceover, subtitling. And I realized that I liked project management more than working just on the language, right? Just translating from one language to another. And I said, you know what? I want to upskill myself. Didn't have to go far away. I had my manager, Madhuri, who said, we learn together, we learn on the job, and there can be nothing better than that. So I learned project management and localization. And then at that time, we wanted to expand, right? Didn't have anybody internally. And I said, you know what? I'll just do that as well. I've done labor economics. I understand how the Indian system works for recruitment and hiring. So we built the DTP team, and then we built the QA team, and we built the vendor management team. And slowly and steadily, we grew to a team of 30 plus, 40 plus, right? And then I took a short break. I took a maternity break. My daughter was born and I wanted to spend some time with her. So I would freelance. I would do translation whenever I had time. And of course, I had my parent company to go back to whenever I needed to do extra stuff. And I wanted to get out from home and just, you know, have fun with languages and meet up with my colleagues. So I did that for a couple of years and then got the opportunity to go back full time once my daughter went to school. And I managed, I would say, one of the most interesting projects of my life called competitive intelligence. So this was a client who would do market research in 10 plus languages. And they actually wanted to do what we do today. They wanted to collect data and come up with data insights. And it was so funny. Their client was a junk food company, right? Not healthy food. And that company was actually sponsoring the Olympics. So imagine a junk food company sponsoring the Olympics that's all about health, and they wanted to collect user data, right? Comments, feedback, sentiment analysis, newspaper articles, journal articles, and see what was the impact of a junk food company, you know, sponsoring something like Olympics. And right. I think that was a project that set us apart from who we were and helped us go to the next level of localization, because it wasn't something that a lot of people had done in India, right? Mm-hmm. So I loved that project, worked with linguists from across the globe, read comments from people who loved sports and hated junk food, or loved junk food and hated sports. You know, there would be like a mixture of comments. And then we went on to work on those projects. And then, of course, the team grew. We got, you know, we merged. And then I actually moved from, you know, handling project management to operations in India, because Madhuri moved to Poland to be part of the headquarters. So I started taking care of the India office, and now I take care of global HR. So lots of hats I have worn, but I would say what I still enjoy the most, and I say it in a very funny way, is PPT, People, Processes, Technology. So you, if you have
in that
the
order,
people, yes, if you have the people, you can make the processes work, and processes can be augmented with technology. So that's what I love doing. And I've been able to do that in various roles within the organization at Suma, because we get those chances to, you know, go to different roles, apply vertically, horizontally, and work with some great people across the globe.
Yes. Wow. Fascinating. That was a lot, right? That was a lot of moving around in the same place. I love that. So, Agatha, what happened from Valencia onwards?
Oh, well, the story is long, and I don't think
Let's
I'll
go.
Be able to cover everything, but just in a nutshell, after Valencia, I headed to Poland for a short period of time again, and then departed to the UK. That's when Next LSP started, and in the meantime, a few more boutique agencies. There was a short German, not that short actually, almost over 2 years episode with a German company. And then I finally reached my destination where I am at the moment, joining Suma. So this is where I am for the last 3 years. And Suma, as Madhu said, it gives you the opportunities to wear lots of hats. And I had the pleasure also to move from different departments and learn from a multitude of really talented professionals. Mm-hmm. And I would like to shortly touch upon what Madhu said about the PPT process, because it's something that sometimes can be considered not so important, or people tend to say that the bigger the company, the less focus you have on the people who work there. But people are always the center of our attention. And when we speak about people, we don't mean the team members only, because we are surrounded by a very large group of vendors. And these are our people as well. So I think this is what makes the LSP experience the most important as a starting point, because you have people, then you apply processes to make it work between a multitude of people. And then you have technology coming in, which is, another topic to be discussed. And this is the future, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the future is always here, right?
Absolutely.
And for us in the industry, the ones who have been here for a while now, the 20-year mark or something like that, we've seen the technology realms, right, integrating in everything that we do, and people being in different moments of this integration. So now it's the big hype and all of that. But I guess for us in the industry, especially the ones like, us, who have been kind of moving around, who have been paying attention to everything around us, who have had the chance of seeing things from maybe an overview of a bigger institution, and or a more multilingual or more international institution, for us it was always quite obvious. And now for the last 20 years we have seen, and more, and before that we have seen all of this coming together, and now it's just one of those moments where things became a bit more visible, and we're now culminating in this new era where things seem to just appear from thin air. But I guess for us it's quite obvious how things have been evolving. And but Agata, you didn't tell me if you have had lots of different roles within mm-hmm. this those years. So that the nutshell was too much of a nutshell.
Yes, absolutely. Well, yes, I went through quite a lot of roles. So as Madhu said, I also had the period of becoming a translator. So this was
you
always
were a translator for some
yes,
time.
Absolutely. It was always either a side job, or it was becoming my main source of income for some times. But the translator thing was always somewhere next to me. So yes, I've been a translator. I've also worked as an interpreter. Sometimes in Portugal, I also help the small local Polish community, and I would go to a court to interpret for Polish people here. But then in terms of the LSPs, I went through from the project manager role. I was moved to the VM as well. So I was coordinating our
You were a vendor manager, or like the global vendor manager?
Yes, yes, it was a global vendor manager role. And then I had the chance also of coordinating production, so the project management team. And then I moved to the managing director role for Poland initially, and then to Europe.
Mm-hmm. So where were you? What were you doing professionally mm-hmm. when you actually moved to Portugal, since it was already 10 years ago?
10 years ago. 10 years
it's
ago.
Like 10 years ago, mm-hmm. what was I doing?
Yes, yes. It's a lot of many things happened in the last 10 years. So back then, I moved, and it was all very new, the language, the culture, and I had to reinvent myself. I live in the very south. There is not too much industry apart from tourism, so I had to find a way to find my business spot here. And this is when I created a small my own translation agency. But soon after, first remote jobs started appearing on the market. So while I was trying to grow my own company, I moved to a German LSP with whom I worked remotely. And then I've also, after two, almost 3 years after, I met Suma Lingua, and then I joined them out after 3 years. But yes, the beginning was just growing my small business here.
Yes. So great. I like that. So you got to Portugal and you didn't think, oh my God, I'm going to work in something totally different. I'm going to reinvent myself or something like that. You were like, nope,
no,
this is what I do.
I think- The passion for languages was too big to mm-hmm. be ignored. And, you know, after the very first months when I already started understanding the culture, the language, and I felt slightly more secured, that's when the need of coming back to the industry grew inside me. Because the more I was reading, I knew that the technology was evolving. There's so much happening in the LSPs, and I either come back to the industry right now so that I can catch up on whatever I have missed, or it would be difficult. So you don't want to miss too many things, as you know, the world around us is evolving so fast. The industry is going through a lot of changes, and it's not from yesterday, but the last years were so intense in our industry. So it's good to stay up to date, and you don't want to miss something happening. That's why I think it's always difficult, you know, to take a break. So it's mm-hmm. it's a blessing, but it's also a problem at the same time. I'm not sure, Madhu, if you had the same experience, that you felt that you really wanted to go back to the industry during your break. But I couldn't wait long. Yeah.
So did you feel that way? So
no,
Agatha was asking.
Actually, for me, it was... since I stayed in touch with the LSP that I was working with,
it didn't feel like you were away.
It
did
feel like I was far
break.
Away, right? It didn't feel like that I was far away. I would, you know, take up work once in a while. And actually, the LSP community in India is also pretty strong. You all must have seen recently we had an event, you know, the organization is called CITLOB. We had a huge
of
event.
Of course,
and
I
Rita,
saw that.
I met Robert.
Robert
there.
Was there, right?
Yes. Yes. So I think from that perspective, and because we are people of languages, you somehow stay within the realm of, you know, talking to people, seeing what's going on, what's changing. And when you come back, it's not like a sudden impact saying, oh my God, how much has changed. So I don't think for me, it was such a big break or a shock, culture shock when I came back. But I loved the way we had evolved. And I think that's what makes our industry so niche. And, you know, and you want to stay here, right? You don't, once you're here, you don't want to leave it.
Mm-hmm. But I do agree with Agatha. If for some reason you're either working for a smaller company, or you're working or focusing more in another role, that doesn't mean that you're so hands-on or that you have to have such deep technical knowledge. And then when you wake up one day, even if you always have been in the industry, right? There's always, if you're not updated, I always say you have to eat these industry news for breakfast every day, or else it's yeah. going to be complicated, because in 5 seconds, someone already bought something else that you thought was
yes.
a standalone thing. And then it's like that. So it has been always very intense. I've always felt that way, because obviously my main clients have always been located in California, where things happen, right? So basically people don't, sometimes some of us don't even consider this, but I do think that we are like the first people to actually have the impact of whatever new is happening in the world, because immediately, even before things hit the market, many times it's us who's going to have to, you know, deal with these challenges, new terminology, new markets that people want to go to, new formats of content. So for us, this is a constant thing. It's like an everyday thing. We have to know who bought who, or else we're going to say something that it's not accurate anymore. So I agree with you that if you're not paying attention all the time, especially the last, let's say, 5 years, probably even more intensely, and also with all the mergers and buyings and sellings and all of that. So while I was in the last company, we also had all sorts of mergers and buying and selling and all of that. And you have to adapt to all sorts of new things, like Madhu was saying. It's the same thing, you just do it with other people and in a different way. And I remember those days of just trying to implement all of that into your head and working with from one or two systems to like 15 systems, because they all had different ones. So it's like, and now companies keep legacy from previous companies and previous companies and previous companies. It's really hard to just get to that point where everything is actually integrated into the last company, that it's not going to be the last one. It's just for those 2 years. So yeah, so things are really moving. And I suppose that the majority of people who are outside our industry really have a slightest idea that this industry we move in is actually one of the most versatile, more rapidly growing, more adaptive than almost anything else in the world. We just think that technology happens or economics happen, but we are immediately getting into that as it happens, right? Sometimes products are not even out and we already know about everything. So we know about things usually for everybody else, right? So usually we people, we language people are very informed, right?
Yes, absolutely. We're very much informed and we are constantly seeking for the information. That's why you have your podcast, right? Where you can meet people from the industry and hear their stories. That's why we're so interested in reading up the news, that there are so many fun, you know, really valuable resources of information. But that's where also all the industry associations come in. So I think that, you know, the latest events of, for example, Women in Localization opening its chapter in Portugal, that's another door opening for all of us, whether they are from South, like myself, from a smaller town, or cosmopolitan Lisbon or Porto. It puts us all together in the same room where we can just exchange our experiences, speak about what's happening on the national level of the translation industry, and then European and global, of course. And then suddenly it joins us all together. So the exchange of information now, it's so much easier. And I think that COVID, if there was one positive thing about COVID, I think this is the only one, right? That it allowed us to open up to remote work and our multilingual world suddenly became smaller, and then we are all interconnected and we stay up to date.
Mm-hmm. I guess maybe in other industries, it's brand new to have remote work, but for us, it's just normal, right? It's been like this ever since they invented the internet. So like I say, we're always at the forefront because it's the nature of what we do. We're up there in communication, right? So in movement all at the time. And that's right. We are all part of Women in Localization. Go figure. But before we get into that, let's talk about Suma Lingua, what it is right now. So you are in India and Agatha is in Europe. So how does this work? What is it like to work in a company where you actually have to be in close contact? Because apparently you two are always, you know, working together. So what's the story? How do you coordinate? How do you feel? What is your company in the world, right? So what kind of clients do you have? What kind of verticals do you work with? What's the story as we speak?
So I guess working together is a motto that we have, right? You work collaboratively, it doesn't matter where you work. And the fact that you can work in flexible time zones, flexible places, that just makes life easier. At Suma, I think what really works for us is that we have people in the team who think diverse, right? So there's always a lot of interesting initiatives going on. We are trying to learn new stuff. We are adapting to technology. I remember we had a recent strategy meeting where somebody said that, you know, AI is not here to replace us. People are getting scared about those things. AI is not to replace us. It's just an enabler, right? And we need to make sure that we adapt to that. And I think that's when the values of Suma become very important. One of them being that we'll take risks. We have innovation braveness, and that we will adapt to what the market is seeking, right? And today, Rita, if you look at the marketing, or you look at the market, it's all about content, be it, you know, languages where content is available in abundance, or be it languages which are low resource languages, right? And what they all need is somebody to get in there and understand what can be done with their data, what can be done with their repositories. So of course we work with, you know, enterprise localization customers. We work with, I would say, companies that want to establish themselves globally and slowly are growing from one market to another. But we also make sure that we provide them information as a trusted advisor, as a trusted consultant. And we say, okay, here is where you need localization. Here is probably where you will need data solutions, right? It's not localization. You might be having content just in one languages, but maybe data solutions is something that can help you. Or this is not work that can be easily done outside your premises. So maybe you would need managed services. You would need us to step in as your project management office and take over your localization process and make it robust. So to answer your question, I think the three big service lines at Suma have always been data solutions, where we provide all sorts of multilingual data services, localization, which is of course important in the multilingual business, and managed solutions, where we actually are an extended arm of our clients, right? We are part of the client team. We work alongside them within their premises, in their office, using their technology to make them efficient in the market. So those are the three big service lines. Of course, it has everything from e-learning localization to audio-visual, We do a lot of fun stuff, like I said, with competitive intelligence and business intelligence, where we are, you know, mapping sentiments of different products in the market. So it's a bunch of activities that are geared to solving multilingual challenges, so that we make sure that when a customer goes out there in the market, they treat multilingual data with the importance that it deserves.
Mm-hmm. So Agata, given the fact that you unlike Madhu, who has been in the company since 2006, so you just arrived, not recently, but actually, it's a shorter period of time. So what is it about Suma that makes you stay and want to feel like you want to evolve in this company, keep going? What's the relationship between your vision and the vision of Suma, for example?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that Suma ticks a lot of boxes, because I think that from the team members' perspective, it allows us to stay up to date and be inside the environment where the changes are happening. So as Madhu said, AI is between us. It's an enabler. It's our optimistic scenario that we want to follow. And this is how we can participate in the change actively. So on one hand, we are focused on those three basic business lines. But if you combine it with a very multilingual, multicultural team, where you have talents and specialists in different areas, it becomes a very, very dynamic environment to be in. And when we speak about people, just also like as Madhu mentioned, it's us, the core team, it's our vendors, but they are of course clients, and they are people that we take care of. So we listen to them, and then we learn how to be flexible and how to be useful to them. What are their needs that we want to meet, and what are the services we can offer? So I think that what makes me always learn, it's the fact, it's the proactiveness, it's the flexibility that we always want to offer. So as I said, there's every day is different. Every day there's a new challenge. Every day there's a new problem. And the best part of it that you have people that want to sit down, have a coffee together and say, okay, let's solve it. We have a problem, but we like problems, because there is a need, there needs to be a solution. So I think it's this variety of people's, you know, minds that are set in the same direction, with the fact that you're in the middle of the change, you're shaping the change, you are working actively on that. That makes it an unique experience, because you don't feel the constant need to search for more. You have everything you need in-house.
Wow, I like that. Very nice. So talking about now the other things that we do within the industry, right? So we said the three of us are involved in women in localization, but women in localization in India has happened before us in Portugal, I suppose, right? So it was like, it's a thing that happened before. So were you involved in the first round? So when the chapter was first founded, did you come afterwards? And what is the story of being part of a company and being involved in an association as a volunteer? So what's in it for you as a member of the company, and what's in it for you as an individual person?
I think what's important, so yeah, India chapter happened before. I was part of the core team when the India chapter was born way back in 2019. Oh my God, it seems like it was many, many years ago. So we got, if you know that at that time, NetApp was a company that used to actually initiate a lot of chapters, right? So Anna Schlegel reached out and said, you know, there's an India chapter opening. Who would be interested in participating and being part of the core team? And the first thing I guess Madhuri told me is, now is the time to give back to the community, right? There's so much we've learned. We've worked with so many people. We need to start giving back. We need to help others who might need support. We need to, and we also need to make sure that India shows up on the map of localization. I think that was important for us, because a lot of people did not even realize that there's such a big localization industry in India. And so many Fortune 500 companies and the big fours are coming to establish, right, shop.
Absolutely.
I think
it's
that
been
was
like
the
that
goal.
For many years.
Yes. And that was the goal. Give back to the community and get India on the map. So started off with the India chapter, was part of their mentorship team, had a lot of fantastic events together. And then, of course, I got the opportunity to contribute to the global community under Carrie Fisher, started working with the global community, you know, the job board, mentorship program, increasing memberships. And then last year, I think I can very proudly say that I've been one of the most fortunate members who's grown within the women in localization community as well, like I did in Suma. Mm-hmm. I got an opportunity to be part of the board, and I lead the global community from a board sponsor perspective. And that, I would say, Rita, has opened up my eyes, and I can give a lot more, not only to the community, but also to Suma, because you learn from fantastic, dynamic women at the board. Each one of them is a powerhouse. And mm-hmm. when you talk about any topic, right, it can be about women CEOs, or it can be about the impact that women have in the industry like localization, right? There's recently a report on which Renato has commented, right, about mm-hmm. what AI can do to the percentage of women working in the localization industry. And those conversations are, I would say, I won't say they're heated, but everybody has their opinion and they are strong voices. And you can take back from each one of them and see, okay, now if I have to, you know, work on something like this at Suma, what is it that I can use from a community like women in localization? And then I tell people at Suma, for example, when I came to know about the Portugal chapter, I said, Agatha, this is it, right? Jump into it. There's so much that you will learn and so much that you can contribute, given the, you know, the kind of value that you bring to the you know, to the localization industry. So you create that safe space, you create that learning space, and nothing can do it as well as a community, Rita. So that's an area where I feel everybody should, you know, find time in their busy work life to give back to a community. It doesn't have to always be a language community, but whatever, right? You can support animals, you can support the, you know, senior citizens in a country, but you have to give back to the community in a way. It actually takes away from the work stress, right? When I go into the women in localization meetings, I'm energized, even if it's at 10 p.m. my time, because people are coming in with so much of, you know, love, affection, passion to do something. And that's the best part. And because of that community, we decided that India also deserves a local, you know, community which talks about the Indian translation industry. And CITLOB was formed a few years ago. And we have, you know, a small group of people who manage, of course, the governing body of CITLOB. Again, thanks to the company, I was fortunate enough to say, okay, I can contribute there as well. And that has been growing steadily and gaining a lot of importance, right? People are talking about us now. We have events. We have people visiting us from the international community as keynote speakers. And it's just been a fabulous journey, I think, where a company lets you explore also your passion to give back to the community. Because in a lot of places, maybe that's not an option, right? Mm. Because it is time that you're contributing to another organization, right? And I think that freedom that we have in Suma to contribute, to be part of, you know, events, to go out there and help people who might need our support, learn from people and bring back that learning into Suma. I think that community corporation connect is fabulous.
Wow. Yes, amazing. Now the cat is out of the bag. Because Agatha obviously was heavily influenced by Madhu.
Yes, absolutely. But that's an example of positive influence that you would like to have for in sure. your life. So I 100% agree with what Madhu said, that after getting so much of knowledge and experiences, it's time that you want to share it with other people. So it's not only about the meetings that you have after work. And you know, Rita, sometimes we just are there chatting for the first 20 minutes of the meeting. And it's just...
Or know, after 2 hours, but well...
Or more, depending on the day, right?
Depends on the day, yeah.
But I believe that the power of community, it's something that, you know, connects people and it makes them want to join, because we see that the community is growing. But even the mentorship program, it's something that it's absolutely priceless, because the higher we get, the more we know, the more we can share. So for those who are reaching the community now, it's a fantastic source of knowledge, and there are so many powerful women that can share that knowledge. And now, of course, when we see at the industry that is going through a change, and it's not only translators, it's not only interpreters, now we have annotators, there are so many new roles within the company, it gives them access to all to all the legacy information that is out there. And as we sell, as we offer new services and these roles happening, we need to have a place where the education can be spread between all different types of levels, roles. And it's you know, the only, not the only, but one of the best sources of learning. So
I agree. I was also just, you know, very interested in everything. And I have been branching out. I guess the podcast has been my window to the world, like I say, right? It's a great opportunity for me. But I think what's really relevant here is that we listen from the wide community of people who benefit and are involved and make it happen in the industry, right? So that's also my goal with the podcast, that people get to understand that the other people that they see these days who are now representing their companies, representing associations, everything, that they have this background and everything goes back to their passion for languages, for communication, and in the end, obviously, for people. So this has been an amazing hour. Believe it or not, it's been an hour.
Ready.
You girls are, you know, very, very good to talk to because you just have a lot to say. And it's amazing. I mean, very eloquent, very, you know, it's amazing. I'm like, wow, fascinated by you. So thank you so much for being here. This was amazing. And just a few final words, I'd say, to what will happen within the context of, you know, your roles in SUMA, and how can we from the outside see this happening, starting with Madhu?
Ah, that's an interesting question.
Because the newsletter, right? You have a newsletter, you have all sorts of means of communication, you post on social media. So what's happening in there that you're doing that you can actually show the world, or that you actually show the world within your communication means?
I think what's important to show to the world and what we will be doing in a big way is to make sure that we understand the importance of upskilling, right? No industry or an industry like ours, and Rita, you put it very, very correctly, right? The changes happen here first, and we need to adapt really, really fast. So I think what's going to be important, not just at SUMA, but everywhere within the localization industry, is to grasp this opportunity before anybody else does, and to prove to them that this is the industry that's here to stay, that's here to make your life easier. And life is complex in companies, right? They deal with so much data. The data is complex. They might think that because the word language exists in large language models, things come for free, but that's not true. There are people like you, me, Agatha, and so many other powerful, enriched people, right, who can help them tide over these complexities. So upskill, you know, and be a loud voice, I would say. Don't get suppressed by all these, you know, things that are out there telling you that this industry is not needed anymore. Be loud, be brave, go out there and challenge everything that's been thrown at you, because sometimes it's from these challenges that you come up with an innovation that will blow the world away, right? So I think it's all about upskilling and being brave. You know, to keep moving ahead and to, you know, make sure that from a rich heritage that the localization industry has, we continue to give back to the global world. That's what I would say.
Yes, very nice. And so, Agatha, final words. What's happening now? What's coming soon? What's coming next after podcast, right? I say there's life before. And after podcasts, usually people get brave, they start doing videos. So it's something happens, because I think it's a powerful thing just to do something that is very different from what you usually do, not because it's good or bad or whatever it is, because this is pretty homemade, as everybody knows, right? But I guess that's what happens. It shakes you up at some point. And usually you have new initiatives that come from this maybe very simple initiative that is to have you, and with a lot of pleasure, in the podcast. So what's coming in the next few months, few weeks, few years?
What's coming? Well, I think it's a continuation of tasks that we're already doing. I think what's important here is to emphasize the fact that there is no separate community of language industry translators, interpreters, or any other roles, and then LSPs on the part. We are part of the same industry. We need each other, and this is where we want to stay. So despite all the technology that is coming and that is affecting our business and it's helping us to grow. Translators and language specialists are here to stay with us, and we want to continue our journey with them. So even though some roles are shifting, we tend to use more data, some projects are different, it opens a lot of opportunities. So as part of giving back, we also want to educate all the collaborators on what is exactly that we do, what is it exactly that we can offer, what else, how they can upskill themselves and how we can upskill ourselves. So I think the educational part is there, but as long as we stay all together and we collaborate and we try to understand each other's needs, then, you know, the industry will flourish and we are there to witness it all together.
Mm-hmm. Very well. It's true. And I have to say this before I go, that I deeply believe in that. And I really, as I've said this many times in many places, I really want to make it my responsibility to actually also bring on the people that are from the LSP sides to make sure that the dialogue is open and that we all know where we are. I'm always on both sides, right? So I'm there and I'm here and I like that. Halfway here, halfway there. It's perfect for me. So I really enjoy the fact that there is a dialogue, a more open dialogue between these that seem to be two different sides of the same coin, but they're not. Actually, one thing does not exist without the other, obviously. So they are the same thing. And we need to make this obvious to everybody who's entering the industry, has been in the industry for a long time. But because things are shifting, now it's more of a presence to have this dialogue, this conversation, that we need to stick together, to learn from each other, and to be responsible for our part in this journey that we together. So thank you so much, ladies. This was an absolute pleasure. I am delighted. I have a new friend now in Madhu, right?
Yes.
and a recent friend in Agatha. So this is how it goes. Like I say, my virtual coffee shop, it's the podcast. Yes. And I really appreciate the fact that you took a few hours from your super busy days to come and talk to us a little bit. I mean, to me in this case, and then to whomever is watching or listening, since we are in video and in audio. And it's, like I say, it's my episode, but it's your episode. So thank you so much for this. This has been amazing. And yes, I really appreciate it. And I'll see you around. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. And I must say that you're the most energetic podcast host that we've seen. We want it's like I'm talking to you and I've known you for years.
Absolutely.
Well, that's exactly the idea. The idea is just to be me exactly as I would be in any other circumstance, and then see what you see is what you get. So if you meet me somewhere else, I'll be exactly the same. Fantastic. The same wrinkles and everything. Thank you so much.
It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much.
It was all mine. Thank you so much.